This next one coming up is our 100th episode.
This one right now.
This one that we've just started recording.
This one that we've just started recording. Are you going to put this in at the start of the podcast? Because I'm getting quite...
Well, I mean, I could do, but yeah. If I was going to do that, then you would expect the theme tune to start about now.
We're having a party.
We are.
We're having a party.
You know, I should tell people that we don't plan these things. You know, these little intros. It takes us all by surprise. Sometimes it takes the person saying it by surprise.
Yeah. I've been quite disturbed by the things that have come forth, channeled at the start of this podcast.
Well, what you do in your private life is your own business, Chris. Yeah.
The reason we're having a party is...
it's our 100th episode!
Woo!
But... we're also going to be fairly subdued because it's not really our 100th episode. It's like our 108th.
Our 100th.
It's our 100th numbered episode.
Normal podcast.
Yeah. Except all the times, like the census one, which is like one of my favourite episodes. Oh, didn't have a number.
Yeah. He's David Robertson, Dr. David Robertson.
And he's Mr. Christopher Cotter. And we are the Religious Studies Project.
Brought to you in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions.
We're here in Teviot in Edinburgh University.
Yes, the
strangely
University.
We've stayed at home.
Yeah. Well, we thought it might have been... it's been sunny, like, every day for the past 4 or 5 days. We thought we might get to drink outside, but not today.
But no, it's not sunny.
It's not bad. But anyway, 100th episode. It's been a pleasure, David.
It's been more than a pleasure, Chris. It's been a privilege. I feel in this, there's been a spirit that's been kind of hanging over us, you know? Mm-hmm. A sort of supernatural agency has blessed this project in many ways from its inception.
And
what kind of being might that be?
And it's taken it and multiplied it, given that we were only going to do 10 to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think you were getting angels there.
I was, yeah. I wasn't sure if you were following or not.
No, I was following.
Yeah. So yeah, there's an angel hanging over this project, I think, Chris. So that's a perfect lead-in to me talking to Ingfield about angels for our 100th episode. I'm pleased to be joined today by Ingvid Gilhus, who is Professor of Religion at the University of Bergen in Norway, and is also currently the Vice President of the International Association for the History of Religions, the IAHR. She's visiting Edinburgh for the launch of the edited volume she's just completed with Stephen Sutcliffe, entitled New Age Spiritualities, Rethinking Religion, published by Acumen. But today we're not talking about the New Age per se. What we're going to talk about today is angels. Now, angels, of course, are a part of the New Age milieu, but also more commonly, perhaps, a part of the kind of Christian world and maybe even beyond that. So maybe that's... first of all, welcome to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you very much.
Let's start by asking then, I mean, what is an angel? What are angels? Where does the idea come from?
The angel comes from the Mediterranean area and the Middle East. The term angel is from Greek angelos, which means messenger. And angels are in the Bible. I think they are mentioned about 270 times or something. They are very flexible beings. And you also have angels, angeloi, outside Christianity and in the Mediterranean religions, more generally. What happened to them in the 4th century was that they were taken over, in a way, by the Christian Church and defined along very strict lines. There had been some cult of angels, but that was now forbidden. Angels, as the church sees them, are beings that have no names and exist by God. They do not come as a personal helper to people. There are some angels that are in a special position, the so-called Archangel Gabriel, Michael, and Raphael. And they were treated more like saints. But I think what we see is that before Christianity, angels were a very loose or open category. It became more defined during the centuries, and they were tamed in a way by the church, who did not want people to worship them, because probably they were seen as it was seen as some sort of competition to what was the real center of Christianity. So I think it was in the church meeting in Laodicea in the middle of the 4th century that the worship of angels was defined as the same as the worship of hidden gods. So it became some sort of paganism. And I also think that angels, they have some sort of mixed development, or angels in Christianity, they are defined in relation to the Bible and to the texts. But angels in art, they have other roots. It is an article by Therese Martin, I think is her name, who has written about how angels, angels are depicted in art, have roots in the goddess of victory.
Okay. Yeah.
Before that, they were seen as male beings without wings.
Yeah. I was going to say that while we were on the subject of the sort of the biblical kind of construction of angels. I mean, they're often, although they are described as wearing white, they're usually young men, and they're not portrayed as doing supernatural, well, often they're not portrayed as doing supernatural things per se. They're just carrying kind of messages.
Yeah, messengers, yes.
Are you saying then that there was no real, at this point, there wasn't a set construction of what an angel was? Were they?
It seems like it was more flexible. Mm-hmm. And wings, for instance, are not mentioned in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wings are not mentioned. And when we have the first pictures of angels in the catacombs, they are young men without wings, but white, as you say, very white.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are described as being, have some sort of blending whiteness. But then they become more gender neutral.
Mm-hmm.
They are in a way men, but they are depicted on the basis of the goddess of victory, and then comes the wings. I also think that if you speak the cognitive language, angels is really some sort of minimally counterintuitive beings.
Yeah.
Because they look like humans, before wings they have a blending whiteness which made them special, and afterwards they may be white, but they have also those wings, so that's the special thing that divides them from
I have heard humans. I've heard it suggested that the white is actually far more unusual and striking for the sort of medieval mind of a few thousand years ago, you know, before the invention of biological washing powders and these kind of things, that actually seeing someone wearing white clothes was practically supernatural in itself.
I have never heard that, but that's a very good idea. I really remember that.
It would certainly make you stand out, I would suggest. But, minimally counterintuitive, then, in the sense that they have
the wings from the birds, but are otherwise like humans.
Yeah.
They have not six. They have not a lot of eyes or ears or hands. But you have, of course, you have in Revelation of John, you have beings that are more complex. But the standard version of an angel became that gender-neutral being with wings.
Indeed, yeah. Male, but only... basically only in name, really, aren't they? There's no hint of sort of sexuality about them or anything like that. But there are... When does the idea of the different classes of angels begin to sort of emerge? Where you have, like, you know, these ordinary level angels for, like, the sort of messenger type, but you also have people like Michael and Gabriel whose nature is perhaps much closer to that of a god, if you like, or god, I suppose.
I think that began when the church wanted to take control over the angels. You made a list of angels and types of angels, and you had a number for the angels. So it is a way of taking control of them, making them into a hierarchy, and not having them fly everywhere and to everyone as they want or people want.
Perhaps a hierarchy that mirrors the hierarchy of the emerging church as well.
Yes, and to keep the angels in that place, I think.
I'm still slightly puzzled about the ontological status of angels, though. What is the nature of their being? They're very curious in that they are in differing degrees along the spectrum between man and God, but curiously not the same way that Jesus is along that spectrum, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
They're clearly supernatural in some way, and yet they lack the agency of humans, and are sometimes even described as finding, you know, our agency and free will, that they're quite jealous of that. And yet they are distinct beings and powerful beings. And I think that sort of semi-divine nature it's quite common in other religions, I would think. I mean, kind of Greco-Roman pantheon, the Norse gods, even the Hindu Buddhist pantheons. But in Christianity, there isn't really too much of that.
No, I think it was also important in Christianity to make them different from humans. They are created on another day than humans, and Christian theologians were very, very, very eager to say that they are different from humans. They are not like, they are not the same as humans. They are different sort of beings, and they belong to the divine world. If God sends them, they can come to humans. But the idea is that humans cannot call on angels and ask them to come when they want them to come.
Mm.
I also think that in angels, they have to do with borders. In Genesis, the Caribbean, they were the gods of paradise, and they also cross borders because they are sent out from the divine world to the human world, and they are also used, I think, in religious debate to mark borders between what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, as in Christianity in the 4th century, when it was decided what angels can do and what they cannot do, what is a Christian angel and what is not, what is outside Christianity. And this is in some ways a similar debate that has been in Norway at least during the last years, because angels are part of New Age spirituality. And the church has not been very interested in angels the last 100, 200 years. But that has now changed.
Yeah, well, that's a great link into talking about angels in the contemporary situation, and particularly in the New Age milieu, if we call it that. I guess the obvious kind of case study is... the Princess Martha Louise.
Yes.
And her Astarte education.
Yes.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about her and her mobilization of angels.
That was news in the newspapers in, I think it was 2007, because it was then known that the princess and Elisabeth Samnøy, they worked together. They started what was called the Angel School or Astarte Education. And that is a school for readings, healing, and other sort of therapies, and angels are part of what they are learning about, and angel therapies is one of the things that they have. And it was the newspapers where I would say very aggressive at first about these angels. And the Christian voices were critical because angels were God's messengers. They were not personal helpers for humans. So then you had something that is similar to the ancient debate about angels. What is an angel? What is a Christian angel? What is outside Christianity? But what we have seen also during the last year is, for instance, that the Church of Norway has reintroduced Michael's Mass, the festival of the Archangel Michael.
Mm-hmm.
He has been away, I think, since the last part of the 18th century.
Yeah.
They took that day out of the Christian calendar. From the late 1990s, it has been included. And that is the day where one remembers the archangel and the other angels. So that is one way to try to take the angels back to the church.
Yeah.
And there have also been several books by professors from theological faculties in Norway that have been mildly critical to the angels of New Age spirituality. At the same time, there have been voices that speak up for taking the angels back, taking the spirits of angels seriously in the Protestant churches, at least in the Norwegian Lutheran Church. One has not been very open, I think, to individual experiences, people who tell that they have seen angels and that sort of things. But recently, this has started to change a little. It's the church, at least some in the church, want to be more open to that sort of experiences, at least if they are experiences that are within the Christian way of thinking.
Yeah. Now there's, I mean, that could be related to a broader kind of pattern of the church or the churches reappropriating popular expressions.
Yes.
I mean, I'm thinking particularly the recentering or the remobilization of Mary, Marianism in the Catholic Church in particular, as a sort of conscious or unconscious adoption of this, the idea of the sacred feminine, these kind of narratives that were so popular in the New Age at the time. And you could also point to the increasing use of the word spirituality in Christian churches, particularly in Britain, where you have these, they're very much trying to reposition themselves as, you know, something experiential and practical.
Yes.
So you have these adverts, you know, try praying. It doesn't say, you know, be a Christian. It's these kind of specific little something practical that you can do. So that's very interesting.
In Norway, we don't see, I think, Cult of Mary or one does not try to reintroduce Mary, as far as I know. But pilgrimage, that has there have been the movement, the pilgrimage movement, and some of the old pilgrim places have been reintroduced as pilgrim places. So people go to, for instance, Trondheim or Nidaros, where the Saint Olav was buried. So that's new, and that has support from the church. But also other things, unrest in houses. When you hear noises in a house, you think that it is haunted. Several people have started as some sort of house cleaners, some sort of supernormal house cleaning. And quite recently, the church has made a ritual for that sort of house cleaning or supernormal house cleaning in Norway. But they are not allowed to say something about the origin, why it is haunted or if it is haunted. But if people experience something scary, spooky in the house, they can't have a churchly liturgy to clean the house.
There's been a big sort of a growth and interest in sort of indigenous traditions. I mean, in the Sami traditions in Norway, I think. Or is that?
Yes, it is. My colleagues at the University of Tromsø, the Arctic University, Trude Fondeland and Siv Ellen Kraft, they have been working with Sami shamanism or Sami New Age spirituality.
Yeah, well, I read their stuff about that they'd really exploded since the sort of early 2000s, and there's now a lot of centres where you can visit and practice. And it was when you were talking about the sort of pilgrimage and stuff becoming very, and an interest maybe in supernatural things. I mean, you know, the idea of visiting these Sami centres and learning about kind of shamanistic techniques and stuff could be seen as part of the same sort of trend.
Yes, and at the same time, it is, I think, an approach to what is conceived of as the roots, as the Sami roots. So you have, it is an attempt to go back to the roots, at the same time as you play with what can be seen more as contemporary religious elements.
Yeah, if I'm remembering what Knut Melvær told me correctly, there are kind of two terms that are used in Norway for these kind of New Age ideas, beliefs. You have spiritualité, which is obviously the, you know, the same spirituality, the same as we would use in English. But then there's a second term called åndelig.
Yes.
Is that the same root? Is there any relationship between the åndelig and angels? Because they seem...
Yeah, I don't know. It is not the same root, but both could also be connected to breath. So it has that some sort of a basic meaning, breath, spirit.
Yeah,
Ånd is also ånde. It has some sort of basic connections to breathing. But those two words have been used differently. It has been a division between spirituality, which is connected to the New Age, and åndelighet, which is more a traditional Christian concept.
Okay.
And Knut is doing some very interesting research on how these concepts have been used. And I think he has mentioned that it is now sometimes people try to use it more across the churchly and the New Age spirituality divide.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to maybe he can comment later on this. That'd be quite interesting. Well, Okay, well, I've got a couple more questions. I was going to ask something else first, but you've suggested now this. Yeah, that's fine, of course. That Christianity New Age divide. Or if there is a divide. One of the interesting things about your work on angels is it slightly troubles the strict distinction between Christianity or a Christian context and a New Age context. I mean, Norway is particularly interesting in that example, I think, because, you know, despite the fact we're repeatedly told it's one of the least religious countries in the world, and yet you have this very high level of identification with the Lutheran Church. You know,
yes.
I think it's in the 70-something percent.
Yes.
So at the one time you've got this very Christian context, but it's apparently a very secular country with all of these kind of, you know, with members of the royal family engaging in these New Age kind of concepts, and specifically the New Age conception of angels. So perhaps you'd like to say something about that context first, and secondly, about how the concept of angels maybe makes us question the strict divide between a New Age context and a Christian context.
Yes. I think that the divide between New Age and the Church is sometimes a more theoretical divide or more the theological divide. I'm not quite sure if it is so divided among people. And you mentioned the royal princess. She has, her three children have been baptized in the church. So the connection between traditional church things and religion, more of a New Age spirituality variety, there are some sort of flexible boundaries, I think. It is also, it's right that Norway has been described as one of the least religious countries in the world. At the same time, I think that Grace Davies' words about vicarious religion, belonging without believing, perhaps also describes the situation in Norway. As you said, 70% or something are member of the Norwegian Church. People are buried in the church. About half, I think, are baptized in the church. And about half, I don't remember the percent, but there are lots are wedded in the church. So the Rite Passage are still in the main churchly rituals. But people do not go to the divine services on Sundays. I think it is 2 or 3% that attend regularly. So it's very, very low.
Yeah.
It's still vicarious religion that you belong, but perhaps not believe so much. I think he has described the situation very well.
Quite a similar situation to Scotland, I would say, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In my experience.
That was your first question. I
yes.
The second.
So how does the way that the concept of angels bridge those two worlds? What does that say about the construction of these categories of, sort of Christianity and maybe New Age in particular? Does it upset the idea of these as very strictly demarcated categories? What does it tell us about the way that people are interacting with Christianity and New Age at the same time, perhaps? I mean, I know people who, Scottish Anglicans, who are interacting with kind of a very New Age concept of angels, these kind of angel colour cards. I was telling you about that yesterday briefly, where they are, you know, there are different angels which represent different colours, which represent different personality types. And this is clearly a sort of theosophically derived idea.
Mm-hmm.
These are the different rays and the personal guardian angel and these kind of ideas. And yet they see it entirely within a Christian context. They identify as Christians. They wouldn't accept this idea of angels as being a new age idea, I don't think. So should we therefore be saying that, oh, this is angels in a New Age context, or this is angels in a Christian context. Should, when angels come up in New Age stuff, should we really just be talking about a sort of folk version of Christianity?
Mm. That is very, it is interesting and difficult questions. I think that if you are making divisions, these divisions, they are not so significant or interesting from a more popular religion or popular cultural viewpoint. It is also, I also think that it is something unruly with angels.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they have not been very important in the Norwegian church for the last 100 years or something. It is the Evangelical Lutheran Church and Protestantism, but it also has to do, of course, with science and the triumph of science in the 19th century. That sort of beings were much more difficult to believe in, at least for the elites in the church. But they have survived in Sunday schools, in primary schools. In Christmas celebrations, you have all those Christmas songs. So,
and they appeared at the Somme. Remember that? You know, in the battles in the First World War, the angels were appearing there.
Yeah, they sometimes appear, and so even if they officially have been out, they have in a way been there without being very theological. Mm-hmm. They have not been theologically very well defined, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are coming up again. They have become more visible, and it is difficult to keep the strict division that one has done earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think the point is that in popular culture and popular religion, what angels are and what they are not, that's not quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not theologians, so they are more open to what an angel is or what an angel is not. And sometimes perhaps people believe in angels and other times they do not. It's not quite clear what it's some sort of background figure in Christianity. They are there, but they are not very well defined.
Mm. So, yeah, that's interesting. So, kind of this resurgence of angels within a Christian context can almost be seen as an act of almost of theological resistance by the non-elite, of sort of reclaiming certain aspects of Christian language and Christian experience from the theologians.
Yeah, at least that was what one saw in the debate after the Astarte inspiration or education was started in 2007. Then the newspapers had a lot of critical articles about the princess and the angels, but many of the letters from common people to the newspapers were very supportive.
Mm.
And then they made some sort of gallops, how many believed in angels in Norway, and it were quite a few. So it seems that there was some sort of division between the elite and what were more beliefs among people.
Indeed. And this might take us quite nicely back to where we started. I think there's an interesting parallel there with some of the 3rd and 4th century Christian texts that we've started to understand a lot more about in recent years. The Protoevangelion and these, the infancy gospels and things. These were widely circulated, hugely populated texts. Often, there's some evidence that, the Protoevangelion, for instance, we have got a lot of copies of that, like more copies of that than any of the sort of official gospels from the period. So there again, at the same point, you're talking about the sort of 4th century when the theologians were working very hard to define what Christian theology was and how the church worked, there was this popular undercurrent which was much more concerned with what Jesus was like as a kid, what kinds of magic he did, how he could turn clay into birds, and lots of accounts of angels having effects on his life and Mary's life and Mary's mother even. So again, the popular religion expressed as angels.
Yes, and you had a lot of angels and demons. And in some of the power centers of Christianity in Egypt, the monasteries and among the ascetics, there seemed to have been a belief in angels and that you had a companion angel. So it was a very lively and belief in angels. But what is also interesting, if you go back to antiquity and then today, in antiquity, the belief in angels they also had a very strong belief in demons. Mm-hmm. It was a world filled with angels and demons.
Mm-hmm.
If you see today on the New Age scene, angels are very popular, and demons are there in popular entertainment, for instance, in movies, but not so visible in the New Age spirituality more general.
Yeah.
So why the angels had demons as their evil counterparts in antiquity?
Yeah.
Now the world have only these, or mostly these kind, helpful beings.
Yeah. The reason I'm smiling there is because actually that sort of demonic side of it's been what a lot of my PhD research has been on, but I won't get into that now because we've been talking for a while. We could we'll maybe talk about that later. But just to bring up another point that you touched on there, this perhaps the reason that we don't have the demonic side of the relationship is because of this idea of the personal angel, that Aleister Crowley's writings, particularly, which drew on the Golden Dawn tradition,
yes,
had this conception of the holy guardian angel, which was essentially your higher self,
yes,
the divine aspect of yourself.
Like you had it in antiquity, in many of the ancient texts.
So perhaps what we're seeing then is a psychologized rendering of that idea from antiquity, but with the idea of the higher self as sort of individuation, you know, that sort of union idea, in which case the dark side is simply, you know, the negative aspects of yourself, really.
Mm. Or perhaps our society, which is a therapy society, education society, there is a more optimistic view of life. People live longer.
Mm-hmm. So do angels then, do angels in these kind of New Age accounts represent an idealized or perfected humanity?
Mm-hmm. I haven't thought about it, but I don't think so. I think they are more like helpers to humans, that they don't have the... perhaps they have, but they are not seen as having their own angel society. They are more... it seems to me that the humans are in center, and then the angels can be there as helpers and beings who are very want the best for you, a being who wants the best for you.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good place to draw close to that. We all like to imagine that there's people out there willing to help us. So. Ingvild, thank you for taking part in the Religious Studies Project and telling us about unruly angels.
Thank you, David.
And back to you in the studio, Chris.
Thanks so much for that, David, as ever. It really is quite fascinating just how much this sort of belief in angels it's quite culturally pervasive, actually. Amongst lots of people, we would say that they weren't religious, maybe even weren't spiritual, but they're still angels.
There's another boundary that's been broken there between religious and spiritual. Should we set up the Wednesdays? Normally it's a written piece, but it's not this week.
We set it up quite well last week.
We did.
We discussed it at length. But what we have coming is a book launch, essentially, for Steve Sutcliffe and Ingvild Gilvis's edited volume, which was called New Age Spirituality, Rethinking Religion. And this book launch happened in Edinburgh a few weeks ago, so we basically recorded the book launch. And there's some quite good material in there. I think you'll agree. There's Marion Bowman, Bettina Schmidt, and a certain David Robertson were involved.
There's top line scholars all, I think you'll agree. What have we got next week?
Next week, we've got Dimitris Zagalitas talking about firewalking rituals, and that's another interview from Tommy Coleman. So we'll have that for you. Next week, we're also going to be joined by Liam Sutherland. To do these intros,
indeed, and you'll be leading into the following week's episode, which is going to be quite exciting to find out what that's about.
Yeah.
But
usual beats,
yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, Google+, iTunes, Amazon,
boom.
We're the Religious Studies Project.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, Rex. Okay, this is Rex.
How old are you? Can you remember?
I'm 6.
You are not 6, you're 2. Okay, what we wanted you to say, if you possibly can you say, thanks for listening?
Thanks for listening.
That's good. Can you say it again, but don't start until after I've finished? Go.
Thanks
Go.
For listening.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Thanks.
Oh, the whole thing. Thanks for listening. Go.
Thanks for listening.
That's pretty good. Well done. Pretty excellent.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Shall we go and see if we can get Ted as well?
Ted's too grown up to come and say thanks for listening. He's too cool for school.
Thank you.
Right, there we are. Okay. Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Good. Thanks. Can I get you to say it one more time? Nice and clear. Go.
Thanks for listening.
What have you got all over your face? Is it peanut butter?
Might be.
Yeah.
It's biscuit.
It's biscuit. All right, okay.
Yeah, I was getting one.
Okay, cool.